It was just a matter of bringing us together 2 years after the Fair Share Agreement had been signed. And I've really forgotten how many member companies and vendors were there at the first meeting, but it was just awesome. I remember Mr. Tucker saying, "We did it."
Welcome to Electric Perspectives, a podcast that explores how America's electric companies are working to deliver the reliable, affordable, secure, and clean energy that powers our economy and our everyday lives. The show is brought to you by EEI, the Edison Electric Institute, which represents all U.S. investor-owned electric companies. I'm your host, Brian Reel. This May, EEI will host its 40th annual Business Diversity Conference in Atlanta, Georgia, where the very first conference was hosted in 1984. As we celebrate this incredible milestone, we also reflect on the origins of this conference, which brought electric companies and diverse industry suppliers together. And as we celebrate the industry partnerships to support minority-owned local businesses in the communities our companies are proud to serve, we also celebrate the important roles these suppliers play in helping electric companies safely operate 24/7, 365 days a year, and 366 days this year. We are fortunate to have a special guest on the show today to take us down memory lane and discuss the evolution of this conference and the impact of these important partnerships. Charlotte Blount Lewis, who worked at EEI from 1982 to 1997, led the efforts to develop the Business Diversity Conference and form connections between diverse suppliers and electric companies. We're thrilled to have her here with us today, and she'll be speaking with Courtney Peterson, EEI's Senior Vice President, Chief Diversity Officer, and Chief Human Resources Officer. I'm so excited to have you both join the show, and Courtney, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much, Brian. Charlotte, it's great to be here with you. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you. And I'm excited to have been invited to participate.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on our show. Let's jump right into it. So you were situated at EEI as an employee at the genesis of our industry's shared commitment to supplier diversity. So we would love to take this walk down memory lane with you. Can you tell us more about the context of what was happening around you in 1984? What was it like back then? And what were the conversations taking place related to how this became a priority for our industry?
Well, actually, Courtney, I joined EEI in February of 1982. And my main responsibility was manager of external programs, and that encompassed a lot, dealing with non-traditional audiences and getting them involved in electricity issues. Jack Young was my senior vice president at the time, and one of the main responsibilities that he gave me was to implement the Fair Share Agreement. Well, I was learning myself about the Fair Share Agreement, and I quickly realized that in order for it to come alive, we had to have more than just the senior officers signing it. We had to have the involvement of the member companies. And so I spent roughly about 2 years traveling the industry, getting to know the major players individually and looking at the programs that they were doing. And I realized that the Fair Share Agreement on paper was for EEI and the American Gas Association, but the bread and butter of the work was being done by the member companies. And I'll say that it was the large urban companies like Con Edison in New York, PECO in Philadelphia, Georgia Power in Atlanta, Arkansas Power and Light, Louisiana Power and Light.
And those companies now are known as Entergy.
Yes. And then, of course, Southern California Edison, Pacific Gas and Electric. Those are some of the major companies that were doing programming, minority purchasing with women and minority-owned businesses. And so it was interesting for me to get to know those individuals and to see what they were doing at the company level. But in order for EEI to make this a reality, it made sense to bring the member companies together after about a two-year span of getting to know who they were and what their accomplishments were. And so I had the privilege of meeting a gentleman by the name of John Tucker. John was a senior vice president at the American Gas Association in the 80s. And he and I actually should have been competitors, but we linked arms and we traveled the country to make the Fair Share Agreement a reality. And the first conference was held in Atlanta because obviously we had the support of Georgia Power Company and Atlanta Gas. And so that is really how Atlanta was chosen. Andy Young was the mayor and very supportive of Georgia Power's efforts. So, but it just made sense for us to go to Atlanta because that's where the heartbeat of the program actually was happening.
Incredible. There was a lot going on and you were at the center of a lot of this incredible work, Charlotte. I would love to know more, and I'm sure our listeners would agree, about the Fair Share Agreement. Like, tell us about what the agreement was comprised of. How did you learn about it? Maybe some of its goals.
Actually, the Fair Share Agreement, the most exciting moment for me was to have then President Ben Hooks, my then Senior Vice President Jack Young, then President of the American Gas Association, Bud Lawrence, and John Tucker there at EEI headquarters signing the agreement. That was momentous. And I knew that while they were the signatories, that the real work relied on me from an electric utility standpoint. But the agreement, as it was signed, had 5 points. Number one, to expand Black access to entry-level corporate jobs. Number two, establish minority vendor programs. Number three, appoint Blacks to boards of directors of corporations. Number four, increase Black senior-level corporate managers. And number five, spur legislation that would permit contracts to be set aside for minority vendors. And the last component is what led me to Capitol Hill, working with then Congressman Perrin Mitchell, the House Business Committee, federal agencies such as the Commerce Department, GSA, Department of Energy, to make minority business development a national issue, something more than just on paper.
So bringing it to life. So those priorities were so innovative, especially at that time. And I often talk about this when I go out and speak about our industry's commitment to DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is that this is not a new thing that our industry decided to do in 2020, but these are longstanding commitments. And at the center of it is this work that was based on the Fair Share Agreement and what became our business diversity priorities across our industry. So it's just so wonderful to hear you talk about that. Do you recall how electric companies were engaging with diverse suppliers before this commitment was codified? Sort of anything about what those activities might have looked like pre-Fair Share Agreement?
Most minority business directors and managers were either Black men or women. And when I went around the country talking to them, learning about what they were doing much of the work that the Fair Share Agreement spoke about. They just hadn't codified it. And so it made it easier for me to talk to them in those terms. And then, of course, to get them to work within their management because it required their CEO to sign off. It was not as easy as I'm making it sound. Believe me. We had many, many meetings. But once the companies realized that, hey, we're already doing the work, why not put it on paper? And most of the companies had relationships with the local NAACP chapter. And so we brought those entities together. They signed an individual agreement, something that was specific to what the company could make happen. Nothing extraordinary, nothing that we imposed upon them. And it was really, like I said, them codifying much of the work that they were already doing. Now, the managers and directors of those companies that were doing the work clearly thought and felt that more could be done, and it needed to be done on the purchasing side. They felt like pennies were being spent with minority and women-owned businesses, and they wanted to see a greater percentage spent. And so that led me to work within EEI with the procurement operation. And I'll be honest, it was more resistant at that level because they felt as though that the vendors that they were working with were fine. But I said, hey, let's start expanding what you have. And so bit by bit, I linked arms with the human resource managers and procurement managers, and again, traveled the country, getting to know different components within the member companies to help make this agreement come alive at the local level.
One of the things that I noticed, Charlotte, in doing this work around diversity, equity, and inclusion is the importance of partnerships. And you've touched upon this several times when you've spoken about the NAACP, when you've talked about AGA, and even your own personal advocacy in terms of driving this mission forward. What are some of the things that you think our listeners would benefit from knowing about what it takes to be a good partner, find a good partner, and why partnerships are so important and so powerful in this work?
Well, you have to be a good listener, number one. For as many trips as I took around the country, if I hadn't had the patience to listen, and really it came down to understanding what wasn't being done, And once we realized, okay, company A, company B, you're doing a lot of great things already, but let's expound upon what you're doing. Let's expand your reach to other business operations and don't rely on the companies that you've been dealing with year after year. Let's look at other opportunities. And so that's really what led us, meaning EEI, to host an annual conference. And while it began as just being an opportunity to communicate with each other as professionals, we realized that expanding it to a trade show was important, to have federal agencies speak, to have the Minority Business Development Council speak, to have people from the Hill come in to talk about this issue from their vantage point. But it wasn't easy. I mean, we're talking about 1982, 83, 84. A lot was going on in the country. But I think as the member companies realized that it was underutilized, underserved components of their service areas that they needed to start thinking about.
Charlotte, we would love to hear about any particularly like memorable success stories or milestones that were achieved along the way, especially in these early days. One of the things that's a cornerstone of our current DEI commitment across our industry is fostering strong community connections. And I know that you were very much involved in the community. So we'd love to hear about some of the things that you viewed as key success stories during that time frame.
I remember one year I did something novel. I worked with Louisiana Power and Light, New Orleans Public Service, and we went into the Lower Ninth Ward. Now, never before had any company, any utility company, gone into the Lower Ninth Ward because those are primarily renters. But as I explained, renters are energy users too. They have to be taught and exposed to energy efficiency, and they need to learn about some of the companies that are out there providing energy efficient supplies that can be of use to them. And so once the company understood that perspective, then we went into the Lower Ninth Ward, and this was long before Katrina. I really didn't realize how groundbreaking that work was until much later. And I think Katrina made it hit home for me to think that we had been there and walked those streets and those pavements and helped people to understand how to better utilize their air conditioning. Because as you know, New Orleans is a hot area, more so than using heat in the winter months. And so that's an example of a groundbreaking example. And then once we started working more aggressively with the California-based companies, Southern California Edison, Pacific Gas and Electric, we learned that there were actually at that time 22 categories of minorities. And so it was no longer just Black vendors, women vendors. You're talking about other nationalities, 22 categories. And that was eye-opening for us. Once, and it didn't happen immediately, but I'd say around the 90s, late 80s into the early 90s, once EEI felt as though that we had done a good job of working with our own member companies, we started branching out to the Hispanic community. Because again, utility companies are serving cities that are browning and they're already Black customers there, but they're browning. And so it was important for us to work with the National Council of La Raza, the National Hispanic League, and other Hispanic organizations to bring them into the fold of minority business opportunities.
So we know that there are certain communities that have been historically excluded from some of the financial benefits of the transition to clean energy economy. What does it mean to you to see the evolution of this work in the context of these now historic financial investments being made into the clean energy transition?
Well, it's awesome because I don't think any utility company or any utility user ever considered in years past whether minority users were interested in knowing about clean air, clean water, clean energy. And it's so important because as we preserve for our youth and our successors, we have to think about what life will be like for them if we're not serious about what we're doing today in terms of clean energy. And so it's an awesome move. I'm happy to see it. And it just, I mean, I get chills sometimes when I think about pre-Katrina in New Orleans and the Lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans, to know that we were there years ago helping people to understand what they needed to do as consumers of energy. So, yes.
You have so much to be proud of, Charlotte, and we're so grateful for your contributions. Charlotte, in your opinion, what are the most important lessons that today's industry suppliers can learn from the experiences and initiatives of the pioneering efforts from 40 years ago?
Being relevant, you know, keeping your business supply relevant. So, I mean, realizing that, yes, the electric utility industry is not the only business that you're selling to, but if you want to do business with this industry, then you have to stay in tune with what the business needs are, what their usage is. If it's clean energy, then you have to get in step with green energy. And maybe that's a component that your business may not have thought of in the past, but that keeps you relevant if you can carve out a piece of it for whatever your business source is now.
Charlotte, the 40th anniversary of the Business Diversity Conference is taking place this May in Atlanta, Georgia. What do you remember about the first conference that also took place in Atlanta, Georgia 40 years ago?
Well, I remember being very nervous. Yes, I had traveled all over the country talking to utility companies and encouraging them to get their vendors to come. But it was still the reality of here we are, we're here now, we're actually going to do this. And I was a ball of nerves. Everything went flawlessly. Things that didn't go so well, nobody knew. But it was just a matter of bringing us together 2 years after the Fair Share Agreement had been signed. And I've really forgotten how many member companies and vendors were there at the first meeting. But it was just awesome. I remember Mr. Tucker saying, "We did it," and we did. I mean, we worked hard. We didn't get as much participation from the gas industry as I would have liked, but where we capitalized on that was our joint companies. And then, of course, we had such support from Georgia Power and Atlanta Gas. And Mr. Tucker's personality was over the top. And so it was just all my nerves when I got off the elevator that morning and just saw so many faces and everybody was excited to be there, then I knew we had done the right thing, that all the hard work, all the discussions were well worth it. And I couldn't have done it without a good planning committee. I remember, bless his heart, Earl Parker's no longer with us from PECO, but Joy Quishlow, Earl Parker, Nelson out of Niagara Mohawk Power. I mean, we had about eight member companies that had worked tirelessly with me, counseling me and telling me, "No, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to make this one come in, that one come in." And to see it all come together, it was just an awesome feeling.
It's incredible to inherit the legacy that you created, Charlotte, and to now be the person that's leading these teams and working across our member companies with what we now call the Executive Advisory Committee, which is the representatives from each of our member companies who participate in helping to plan the conference now. We are so excited to have you in Atlanta with us in May, and excited for you to be able to see how this has grown over the years. Does Atlanta hold any special significance to you personally? Are you excited to be in the city?
Yes, absolutely. I spent more time in Atlanta for EEI than I did in my hometown of Washington, D.C. I ultimately serve on the board of Atlanta University, and I was there at the merger with Clark College. John Tucker and I became great friends. And so, you know, just being in Atlanta, whenever I go back, I get, you know, my heart fills up because it's like going home. It's my second home. I love it there. And I have always great memories of EEI and the work that I did and the hours that I spent traveling to Atlanta. I used to have a go-kart at the Hyatt because I stayed there. They knew me when I got out of the cab. I would come in and out so much every month. So it's like going home. It's my second home.
Wonderful. Well, Charlotte, I want to thank you for all that you have contributed to our industry, for your legacy of leadership and being an advocate and a champion for this work. It was wonderful to talk with you today, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in person in Atlanta at the conference.
Thank you so much, and likewise.
And that's our show for today. Thank you for listening, and come back next week to hear more from experts and industry leaders who are talking about the innovative ways electric companies are building a cleaner, smarter, stronger energy future for the customers and communities they serve. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Podbeam, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Electric Perspectives. I'm your host, Brian Real. Thanks for listening.